Chapter 9. Friday afternoon, June 8, 2007. Tree was the president of the division's American Northwest Men's Baseball League. Knowing that the ball field at Bryden Falls would be in bad shape, it had been raining steadily for a couple of days now, he phoned his bud to check it out. "Hey, Pastor Mac, is Canada still where we left it on Tuesday, or did it float away?" "How am I? Bitter? That bad call from the ump at home plate cost us the game and the championship." "Yeah, I'll bet you're sorry." "What do you mean we were due for a win? It wasn't we that beat us. It was him." "Him is that back catcher. What's his name, Rue? He won the game for you guys. First a grand slam home run, then he strikes three of us out with less than 10 pitches, and he isn't even a pitcher, and then the guy hits a deep inside pitch to bring in the winning run." "Sure, there were 8 other guys on the field. I noticed them standing around. But enough small talk. What shape is your diamond in? Has it been raining as much there as here?" "A swimming pool, eh? Yeah, I told the Pirates coach tonight's game was canceled. Any chance of playing a makeup game with the Pirates tomorrow? We're supposed to get sunshine tomorrow." "Well, how about Sunday?" "Nope, Sunday afternoon's out. The regular season is officially over at 1 p.m. Sunday, June the 10th. Any chance you could cancel your Sunday service and play in the morning?" "What do you mean you'll have to make a phone call? I thought you were the captain of that ship." "Used to be, huh? Now listen, pal, I want you to understand something. If you don't play the Pirates, you're in by default." "That's what I said, default. I've gone over both your total runs scored and runs scored against you, and the Challenger scored better than the Pirates. That means if you can't play a makeup game, the Challengers are in the playoffs, and the Pirates are out. Got it?" "I checked with the directors and we all agree you are not obligated to cancel your service on such a short notice." "That's right, you got it, bud. You pastors are very keen. If you say no, you won't cancel your Sunday service, you're automatically in the playoffs for the first time and probably the last." "No, don't make that phone call yet. Let me get a hold of the Pirates coach and run it by him. I'm going to tell him that he is at your mercy. The guy's a bit of a jerk, and I want to see him suffer in suspense for a while. Before we go any further, he's going to have to assure me he can get his team up there Sunday morning, should you decide to cancel your service. I'm sure he'll twist arms if he has to." "That's right. I'll let you know if it's a go tonight. Don't go to bed early." "Yeah, later, pal." Sipping coffee at the kitchen table, Mac tried to assimilate this new development. Is the rain a curse or a blessing? If it were not for giving Reuben his word, he wouldn't hesitate to cancel the Sunday service. But now he had to let Tanner make that decision. "The rain is a curse," Mac concluded. He wanted to get Sunday service over with so he could start the patching up process. He already made an appointment with Superintendent Johnston for Tuesday of the following week. The only disagreement between them was Tanner's preaching on Sunday, but soon Sunday would be history. Mac would explain again, he felt obligated to keep his word, though a foolish word it was. Surely the man would understand that. Surely he wouldn't dismiss a long record of faithful service because of one disagreement, because he was standing on principle. He will invite the superintendent to be guest speaker at a series of meetings Mac planned to hold for the purpose of diluting the negative effects of Tanner's message. But if this thing dragged on for another week, it would keep everyone on edge, including the superintendent. And then he thought, perhaps the rain is a blessing. Had he not agreed to let Tanner speak two successive Sundays? If Tanner canceled the service, it would mean no preaching by the plumber. Ever. Everyone, well, mostly everyone, would be happy. Martin Johnston, the Board of Elders, Vivian, Kyle, most of the congregation. If Rue didn't cancel, the challengers were sure to be in the playoffs, and Plan A would still be in effect. Then Mac thought, but supposing Rue asks if he can preach the following Sunday? That's easy. I'll just say no. No, 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 he practiced out loud. No, 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 he said again. Sorry, pal, I kept my word. I said two successive Sundays, and I'm not obligated to let you have the pulpit next Sunday. For the good of the congregation, I will have to refuse you. Mac already asked Phil to contact the challengers regarding the cancel of tonight's game. There was nothing for Mac to do but wait for Tree's call. Friday, June 8th, 2007, 10:15 p.m. It was late when the phone finally rang. Vivian had gone to bed. Mac was trying to finish The Way It Is so he could put it behind him. About time, Mac answered the phone in a not unfriendly voice, knowing who it was. Good. I thought they would. It should be a good game, if there is one. Too bad you couldn't be here to see it. Yes, I know, bud. I feel bad for you and Sally and the kids. I wish I could be there for you. Are you sure that's best? I mean, no communication whatsoever? You're still their father, and I know Sally has strong feelings for you. I won't argue with you, Tree. I just feel bad, that's all. Will you be okay when they're gone? Tell you what, let's set a definite time to get together, say every 2 weeks. We can meet for lunch somewhere between your place and mine. What do you think? I know you don't need a babysitter, and I know you can look after yourself. But that's what friends do, isn't it? Visit and chat and get on each other's nerves. Yeah, think about it. Okay, back to baseball. The next step is to see if our Sunday service can be canceled. Can I put you on hold while I make a phone call? Reuben, you're still up. Pastor Mac here. I was up reading your book. You too? Are you nearly finished? I hope you're getting something out of it. But that's not why I phone. I've got the president of the Men's Baseball League on hold. The only time we can play the Pirates is Sunday morning. That means canceling the service. He also said we're not expected to cancel Sunday's service on such short notice. And if we don't play the Pirates, we are automatically in the playoffs by default. So it's your call, pal. I gave you my word you can preach two successive services, and I will keep my word. Just say no and you can preach as agreed, and the challengers are in the playoffs. Do you want some time to think about it? Really? Are you sure? You don't want time to think about it. Okay, Rue, whatever you say. Can I put you on hold for a minute? Tree, still there? It looks like there'll be a ball game Sunday morning. Let's make it 10 a.m. That'll give us time to deal with a wet diamond. I know, if we lose, we're out of the playoffs. The person I was talking to thought it wouldn't be right to win by default. Okay, Tree, hope to see you in the playoffs. What's that? Oh, yes. Love you too, Tree. Yeah, later. Strange, Mac thought. Tree never said I love you before. Sunday will be a rough day for him and his family. Why couldn't I be there for him? Rue, still there? It's settled. I'll get Pastor Phil to cancel the service and tell everyone there will be a game at 10. Do you think you can come a bit early to help with the diamond? Thanks. I must say that was big of you. I know you wanted to preach the last half of your message. I think, however, this is best for the church. I guess the Lord wanted it this way. And a good night to you, Rue. Yes! Praise the Lord, it's over. It's really over. I can't believe it. Thank God for rain. I'll never complain about rainy days again. Saturday night, June 9th, 2007. The stars were a welcome sight to everyone at Foundation Fathers Festival. The forecasted rain had passed, and fair summer weather was promised, though heavy rain was on its way again. Friday night festivities had been canceled, and Saturday night's turnout was larger than anyone expected. The More Lord Worship Band would be the highlight, following a comedian act and a gymnastics exhibit. The band would perform until 10:30, and the festival would end with a fireworks display. The opportunity to give witness to Christ in His awesome salvation through song and music was more favorable than any other time in the history of the band. Never before had the worship band performed before such a huge audience. Hearts are more open to the message of Christ during a time of celebration, a time when hope can penetrate normally closed hearts. Spiritually, it was a unique opportunity. The young band members tuning up on the stage had the appearance of being prepared and confident. In fact, they were neither. They were not together, and because they were so fractured, they had not come together in prayer. Nor did they have much prayer support from the distracted congregation. Todd had not yet conquered lead, and Kyle's visible impatience was reducing what confidence he had. Every band member was the victim of stage fright, intensifying as the crowd swelled. Musical harmony refused to come. The sounds that came out of Todd's voice were not at all indicative of the young man's talent. John's mellow violin, meant to accentuate pleasant music, was an annoyance. The audience chattered and fidgeted. The center people, out in large numbers, were embarrassed for their band. Midway through the program, Kyle presented the gospel message, and though his presentation was flawless, the gospel emitted from a heart bitter and confused loses much of its power. Reuben and Jenny were standing behind the seated audience holding hands. Reuben felt responsible for their poor performance on stage. He was now certain he had made a mistake. He should never have asked permission to preach. Had he stuck to his pipe wrenches and coveralls, the locals and tourists would now be getting a proper presentation of the gospel. The rain had broken what was left of his resolve, for the rain was not from man, but from God. God had spoken His will through the rain, obviously to rescue Bryden Falls Community Christian Center from further injury. And there was nothing Reuben could do to repair the rift he had caused. He couldn't even publicly apologize to the congregation. He would never be allowed access to the pulpit again. On the other side of the audience, Mac and Vivian were standing together, not holding hands. Mac too felt responsible for the lackluster concert, and he ached for his twins and the other band members, feeling their tension and embarrassment. Mac was certain the city councilors would never invite the More Lord Band to perform again. If only I had said no. And again and again, if only I had said no. Tomorrow will be a better day, Mac thought. He was optimistic the challengers would give the center people a boost and recover some of its lost esteem. Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 8:15 a.m. Henry reached retirement age a few years ago, but refused to let go of the job he loved. He never tired of the regard the public gave him whenever he asked, "Do you have anything to declare?" Or, "In what country were you born, madam?" Or, "How long will you be in Canada?" When he asked questions, he searched their eyes for fear, an indicator they had something to hide. He was good at what he did. 40 years as border security guard gave him a nose for mischief. The moment he retired, he would stop being a somebody. He had no reason to call it quits. The pirates came through his station in twos and threes and sometimes with their families, starting at 8 a.m. "Good morning, guys," he said to one familiar carload. "A big game this morning?" "Well, I can't wish you luck. I know the Challengers need this game as much as you guys." "Well, maybe, but I hear they're playing fine ball lately. They beat the Grizzlies a few days ago." "Drive safe now." Henry was all baseball. He watched the Challengers-Grizzlies game and enjoyed seeing the rowdy Grizzlies get their dues. His night shift would be over in an hour. Maybe he would take in the last half of this morning's game. Should be a good one. Henry was surprised to see Ruben's plumbing van headed towards the States, approaching the American Customs Station. Close enough to see Ruben Tanner in his Challengers uniform, he could only conclude, "That boy's going the wrong way. The fool thinks the game is across the border." And then, less than a minute later, he recognized the Tanner minivan, the Tanner woman doing the driving. Strange they aren't traveling together. They both seem to be in a hurry. Boy, are they in for a surprise when they find out the game is being played in their own baseball diamond. Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 8:35 a.m. "Mr. Macklin," John interrupted Mac, making up the batting order. "My dad asked me to tell you he has a pressing matter to attend to today."
"No, John. You mean he'll miss the entire game?"
"Yes, sir.
But this is a crucial game. We need him."
"No, no, no," Mac wailed an inward wail. "Tanner, how could you do this to me? To your team? To the church?" And then, "Well, Marine, you better get tough. Don't let your team down. This game is ours, with or without Tanner." Yet the Marine knew he was in for the fight of his baseball career. A win with Tanner was never simple. A win without Tanner would be a real challenge. Pitching to Phil Ferguson just wasn't the same as pitching to Rue. Phil was nervous back there, never kept his glove a steel target like Rue did, didn't know the signals, and he wouldn't know what signals to give if he did. Until this game, Mac never realized how dependent he was on Rue's calm expertise. And they really needed Rue's batting. He was dependable, the equalizer that made up for the weakness of most others on the team. He usually managed to get on base. If he didn't get a hit, it was because he got a walk. He got a walk often because they were nervous to throw him anything he could hit. Because he got on base so often, he scored much more than anyone on the team. "Mr. Macklin? Why did John call me Mr. Macklin? I wonder who he got that from." Of course, Mac knew John was influenced by his father, the only one in the congregation who didn't call him pastor. Those two words, "Mr. Macklin," said much to Mac, none of which was pleasant. John was declaring himself to be with his dad. Worse, John was turning his back on his denomination and a future as a pastor. And still worse, John would never be his son-in-law. "And John's siblings?" Mac asked himself. "Will I be mister to them or pastor? And Jenny? She undoubtedly will follow her husband." Mac was certain the rebellion that had spread from Reuben to his family would certainly extend to other families. Mac knew a confrontation with Ruben Tanner was just around the corner. After the baseball season, of course. Tanner was a must if they hoped to win the playoffs. Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 8:35 a.m. "Jenny, I think this is where we part company.
Reuben said to his wife on the cell as they came to a T intersection 20 minutes south of the border. You turn left and head east, and I'll go west to River's Bend. I hope you do too, honey. I would say they have an hour's head start on you, maybe more. We may fade in and out on ourselves, but the Lord never fades out. I'll be praying for you. It was a mistake that Shep, offspring of their first Shep, was at his side in the front of the van. Rue was in such a rush he never thought of the old shepherd Coley asleep in the back on an old pair of coveralls. The morning started with the Tanner family getting prepared for the big game. Reuben was in uniform when Jenny came into the bedroom. Reuben, something's wrong. With Trevor Kenny, I mean. The Lord spoke to me. I think you have to find him.
Now?
Yes, now. But Jenny, I can't. The game. They need me. Trevor needs you, Reuben.
But I don't know where he is. I think he lives in Rivers Bend, but that's a big place. How will I find him? And if I find him, then what?
You must find him, or it'll be too late. And I must find Sally and her two children. I was praying for them, knowing this was the time they were saying their final goodbyes. The Lord wants me to find them and bring them back here.
Here?
Yes, to live with us, for 1 year. They're deeply wounded, and they're headed for a huge city of strangers. They need stability. Sally needs our family to bring strength and healing to her family.
John,
Rue called downstairs to his oldest, also in his Challenger's uniform. John, we can't explain, but Mom and I have something important to do. We have to put some heavy responsibility on your shoulders. Are you willing?
Anything.
Take the kids in the crew cab pickup to the ball game. Instruct them to sit together in the bleachers during the game in a place where you can easily see them. Tell them not to respond to any negative comments they might hear about me. As soon as the game is over, bring them all straight home again. We may be the entire day.
Got it.
Tell Mr. Macklin I have a pressing matter to attend to.
He won't like it.
You're right, he won't like it. This game means a lot to him.
And the whole team, John said.
Yes, and the entire church. But you have a good chance of winning without me.
Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 9:30 a.m.
Sally had to fight off tears so she could see the road. She just wanted to go. Go fast and go far. Far away from the pain of final departure. Far away from the man she was determined to stop loving. The father of her two most precious valuables. The goodbye was wicked. Trevor was leaning against his shiny black pickup when they arrived a few minutes late at the designated park. His mustache trimmed. He seemed dressed for fishing. His favorite fishing shirt covered a cotton t-shirt. Each waited for the other to speak, but no one did. The words had already been said. First, it was Sally's turn. Trevor accepted her embrace, not an extended embrace. They didn't want this to drag out. Sally looked up into her man's face for the last time. Tree's expression was rigid. He would not allow tears. He still had Marine in him. Sally stretched to kiss his cheek and turned to the car. Kay Lynn was confused and angry. Why must she lose her father? What had she done that this could happen to her? Trevor let her hold him for a long time, her head leaning against his chest. Caitlin wanted to say, I love you, Daddy. She wanted to say, I'll never forget you, Daddy. She wanted to say, goodbye, Daddy. But words remained inside. Caitlin joined her mom in the car, leaving the side door open for Brandon. Brandon was a tall lad, his posture noble like his dad's, even though he often slouched like his dad. He could not see through tears that wouldn't be stayed. He didn't move. His head drooped helpless in a cool June morning. Trevor rested a hand on the young man's shoulder. Brandon could feel the squeeze of his dad's hand and considered it might be a token of affection. Tree felt his son's body shuddering with grief and could take no more. It was he who would leave. As he pulled away, Brandon seized the bottom of his father's open shirt and wouldn't let go. A son needs a dad. Any kind of a dad is better than none at all. And as long as Brandon hung on to the shirt, there was hope. Trevor undid the cuff buttons, removed his shirt, climbed into his F-150, and drove away, leaving his family behind. He took a final look in his rearview to see the minivan, side door open, his son motionless, head drooping, clinging to the shirt hanging down to the pavement. Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 10:15 a.m. The diamond was still in rough shape because of 2 days of heavy rain. The game should have been well underway, but both teams were trying to work the large puddles out of the pitcher's and batter's area. The Pirates were eager to help, carrying sand from the sidelines to fill in the holes of water, raking the diamond, marking the lines with white powder. They knew if the game couldn't be played, the last playoff spot would go to the challengers. Warming up his arm on the sideline, Mac was distracted and Mac was angry. John's words, "My dad asked me to tell you he had a pressing matter to attend to," thoroughly peeved Mac because he knew better. Rue never missed a game. Mac was certain why Rue didn't show up. Revenge. This was Rue's opportunity to get back at him. Mac didn't offer him use of the pulpit the following Sunday, and this was Ruben's retaliation. And Mac had to admit he hadn't displayed sportsman character. Had not Rue conceded to allow the Challengers and Pirates to play this morning when he could have said no? It was Mac's place to respond in good faith, but he wasn't about to forfeit an opportunity to get everyone out of a big mess. Still, this was a brutal retaliation, and Mac was irritated. I suppose the pressing matter is a leaky faucet. Maybe he had to collect an unpaid account. Maybe his van was overdue for an oil change. Had the service not been canceled, the pressing matter wouldn't have kept him from the pulpit. Perhaps, Mac reasoned, Rue wanted to strike out at the entire church because of their reaction to his message. Everyone would be sorely disappointed if they didn't make the playoffs. Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 10:35 a.m. First inning. The Pirates immediately sensed the weakness Rue's absence made. Whenever a batter made it to first base, it was an easy steal to second, Phil's throw from home plate being less than fast and less than accurate, and a fast runner can make it to third. Mac and Phil were not connecting. Phil often forgot the signals, and that caused him to miss the ball, allowing runners to steal home for a score. The Pirates got an early 6-0 lead. Third inning. In the third inning, the Challengers had three men on base with two out. Normally, Ruben would be at bat with a good chance at scoring some runs. His replacement struck out. The Challengers were still behind, 6-2. Sixth inning. Mac was still confident they could come from behind. He steadied the guys in the dugout. He focused hard on each pitch. He had plenty of arm left, probably enough for the entire game. And his team was beginning to hit. If only Phil could catch the ball and get the signals right. Bottom of the sixth found the bases loaded again, though it cost the Challengers two outs to make that happen. This time, John Tanner was at bat. A heavy hitter, and the Pirates knew it. Everyone, outfielders and infielders, backed up. John fooled them. He laid an unsuspecting bunt down the third baseline, scoring a run. Mac was next to bat, and he was determined to smash the ball. And he did. The inning closed 6-5. Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 10:35 a.m. Trevor Kenny was in a rage driving into the hills heading for his fishing site on Bryden River, northwest of Rivers Bend. Grief and anger were released in guttural groans and much cursing. As usual, God, who could have and should have but didn't, was blamed for everything. Tree swung his fist at him, but only managed to hit the windshield. Since he couldn't hit God with his fist, he hit him with words, ugly words used only by the shameless, words that surely could never be forgiven. Tree wasn't pained so much at the loss of his family as his family's loss of him. Hurting his family was nothing new. Countless times he kept them on edge while he spent long nights with the guys at the pub, murmuring against everything bad, everything good, and everything in between, which seemed to have the effect of increasing his self-worth. His humor and interest were for others. His family got his grumpiness and not much else. But this morning was a different grief for his family, a ripping, gashing pain not to be forgotten for many months. Yet it had to be, Tree was convinced. His family deserved more than this. Best they kiss this life goodbye and reach out for something better somewhere else. After parking his F-150 in an inconspicuous place at a hunter's camp, he hiked the mile through the bush to his favorite fishing spot, where he had caught lots of trout over the years and downed plenty of beer. The river was full and fast because of the rain, making the appearance of accidental drowning more irrefutable. For an hour he fished, catching three keepers, drank a couple of beer, dumped a few more on the rocks. He left his rod and a light jacket on a slope too steep for safety. Now he must hike to his cabin unseen, not letting anyone get a glimpse of his unusual tall stature or his identifiable mustache. Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 10:35 a.m. Jenny could only guess Sally would take this highway until it took her to an interstate heading east. And she could only hope the Kennys would make a stop, gas or breakfast, before the interstate, or catching them would be near hopeless. She looked to the left and right at every gas station, looking for a red minivan, though not sure red was the right color. Uncharacteristically, she broke every speed limit and hoped she wouldn't be stopped by a vigilant law enforcer. Sally was 45 minutes ahead. It wasn't the need for gas or hunger for the breakfast they have yet to have that made her pull over into the last cafe gas stop before the interstate, but a need to wash up, to splash their faces with cool water. Once here, they decided to gas up and attempt a breakfast. Once on the interstate, they wouldn't stop until dark. Each one nibbled on their breakfast, and Sally asked for a to-go cup for her coffee. Were they here? Jenny was not talking to herself, but to her Lord as she passed the cafe, but seeing nothing red. What chance have I got to catch up now? Maybe they're not going on the interstate. And if they get off, how could I ever find them? Both faith and hope were shrinking. Nonetheless, she circled the ramp, got into the passing lane, and drove fast as she dared. Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 10:45 a.m. Rue found a dozen Kennys in the phone book and called them all. Those who didn't answer, he drove to the address, sure he would recognize Tree's black pickup. And then he remembered Tree sometimes talking into a cell and concluded he was enlisted. Now what? He couldn't phone Mac. He was playing ball. Nor did he want to. He could imagine the conversation. Do you know Tree's address? Sure. Why are you looking for Tree? I think he may be in trouble. Trouble? What kind of trouble? I don't know. Why do you think he might be in trouble?
I don't know. He wouldn't implicate his Jenny.
You mean you are missing the most important game of the season because you think Tree is in trouble, but you don't know why you think Tree is in trouble?
No, Rue wouldn't want to talk to Mac.
He inquired at a few gas stations. A tall man, very tall, early 40s, walrus mustache.
Sorry, the reply was always the same.
And then, have you heard of the Grizzlies, River Bend's baseball team?
Sure, this is a baseball town.
Do you know where their baseball field is?
The other side of town. I'll show you on a map.
Nice dog you got there. Purebred?
Yes, we have had him for a long time.
Can I buy that map? I think I'll need one.
You can have it if you gas up here.
Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 12:20 p.m. Seventh inning. Neither team scored, yet it was evident it was the challengers who were the threat. The momentum was changing, and Mac was positive. Since the base runners could easily steal bases once they got on, Mac reached down into himself to throw his best ever and managed to tickle the corners of the plate barely within the strike zone and struck them out one by one. Eighth inning. The challengers were still one run behind, 8-7. At the bottom of the eighth, it was the challenger's weakest link in the batting order. The Pirates pitcher struck the first challenger's batter out, but, oddly, the Pirates changed pitchers. After 10 rather slow warm-up pitches, the ump impatiently called, "Play ball!" Phil was next on the batting order, a so-so hitter, and could only hit a weak grounder to first base for the second easy out. But Mac wasn't disturbed. He knew he would face the Pirates' weakest hitters in the top of the ninth, and his pitching was very good today. And for the bottom of the ninth, he had a bold strategy. Mac told the third batter to purposely strike out so that the next batter on the batting order, John Tanner, would be the leadoff hitter in the ninth. There was a good chance that John, one of the challenger's best hitters, facing the Pirates' number two pitcher, would get on base with a hit or a walk. Once John got on, he would signal John to steal second, and Mac, following John to bat, would help him out with a swing and a deliberate miss to distract the catcher. No one runs faster than John Douglas Tanner. He would make it to second. The challengers would then have three outs to get John home to tie the game. And if Mac managed to get on base, "I'll get on base if it kills me," he could score the winning run. By now, the Challengers fans were noisy with excitement. They needed this game to help eradicate the shame of finishing last place so many times, the shame of butt jokes always reserved for the weaker teams. There was a time when winning was quite secondary to the foremost ambition of being a light to the unsaved, an influence for Christ. But the secondary usurped the primary years ago. Like the other teams in the league, winning was paramount. "But what's this?" Mac wondered incredulously. "The Pirates changing pitchers again, twice in the same inning?" In comes their number three, another 10 slow warm-up pitches. "Dumb," Mac thought to himself. "Why put in a secondary pitcher now? Sure makes it easier for us. Now we get to face their number three pitcher at the bottom of the last inning." The challenger's batter deliberately struck out, as Mac instructed him to do. Ninth inning. Mac was standing on the pitcher's mound, eagerly waiting for the first batter. But there was no batter. Mac looked to see the Pirates coach in a very heated discussion with the umpire, pointing at his watch. The umpire waved Mac into the dialogue. "Mac," the umpire said, "I'm sorry, the game is over. The regular season ends at 1 p.m. and it is now 1:04. I tried to talk to the Pirates into finishing the game, but they won't budge. Because they are in the lead, the game is theirs. I'm sorry."
"Now wait a minute," Mac protested.
They purposely delayed the game. That's why they changed pitchers twice in one inning. It does seem that way, but it's within the rules to change the pitchers twice in an inning. If we could have started the ninth inning by one, I would have made them play. I'm sorry, Mac. The game is over. The Pirates win. Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 1:15 p.m. 2 hours of speeding the interstate brought no success in finding the elusive red van. Jenny concluded she either didn't see the van because of trucks and buses and RVs, or she hadn't caught up to them yet. Perhaps Sally was a faster driver than she was. It took her a while to realize the colored lights of the state patrol car she spotted in the rearview mirror were for her. She worked her way to the inside lane the quickest she could and came to a stop near a no stopping sign. The officer walking to her car was a young man, well-groomed and sunglassed. "This is it, Lord. I give up. The chase is over." "Good afternoon, madam." The young officer's voice was stern. "Officer, I am sorry. You see, I was trying to catch up." "Please step out of the car, madam." "But officer, I can explain. Please step out of the car, madam." "Yes, sir." Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 1:15 p.m. The scratches tainting Tree's face didn't bother him a little. They wouldn't hurt for long. Staying in the dense trees away from the river kept his tall figure concealed. He hiked a short distance, watched and listened, and walked some more. A few hours later, shortly after one, he came to the backside of his property, confident no one had spotted him. Before getting to work, he grabbed a cold one from the fridge. So far, so good. Tree removed the sod and placed it on one side. Digging the grave the second time was much easier than the first. He dragged a plate of safety glass over the hole, moved the crate on top of the glass, filled the crate with the dirt from the grave, and neatly placed the sod on top of the dirt. Next, he dug a furrow under the glass, big enough for his slender body. He returned to the house to grab another beer and a flashlight. He remembered the last funeral he attended. People placed a few keepsakes in the coffin. He thought, what would be a fitting token for old Tree? He considered choosing one of his many baseball or bowling trophies, but they would only be a final reminder of his loss of this year's championship. He took the one family picture of a few years ago off the wall, removed it from the heavy frame, scribbled over himself with a felt pen, and returned the picture to its frame. While squirming into his grave, he thought of the jacket he intended to use to protect his face from the dirt that would fall on him. He backed out, returned with his grizzly's jacket, took a final look around for nosy neighbors, and began to squirm a second time into his grave, when he realized he forgot his pistol. Returning to his house, he lingered a moment, scanned the scanty furniture, looked out the kitchen window, his favorite looking out spot, sat in his recliner, fully extended, for a few minutes, spun his pistol around his index finger, imagining himself a fast gunslinger, waved goodbye to himself in the bathroom mirror, combed his walrus mustache, locked the outside door, and squirmed fully into his tomb. From inside, he filled the furrow with dirt. Where is that flashlight? And after groping around the dark, oh, there it is. Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 1:25 p.m. Though wanting to distance herself from River's Bend, Sally felt less intimidated by the slower traffic in the inside lane. She felt for the lone lady she spotted on the side of the highway emerging from her minivan, obviously stopped for a speeding violation. "That's Jenny Tanner," she exclaimed, pulling over and coming to a sudden stop. Mom, who is Jenny Tanner? Caitlin asked, both teens suddenly alert.
That's my new friend, the one I've been talking to every morning.
Sally backed up towards Jenny and the uniformed officer searching her car for alcohol or drugs.
What is she doing here?
By herself. Climbing out of her gray minivan, Sally yelled,
Jenny, it's me, Sally.
Sally, thank God I found you. And they hugged each other in delight under the no stopping sign.
Jenny, what are you doing here?
I've been looking for you and the kids.
But why?
Excuse me, ladies, the young officer said. The Lord wants you and Kaylin and Brandon to come and live with us on the ranch for 1 year.
What? Jenny, you know we're on our way to the East Coast.
Excuse me, ladies, the young man tried again. I really think the Lord wants you to come and live with us. A time of healing. I know it must sound strange, but the Lord spoke to me this morning when I was praying for your family.
But Jenny, we've got plans. We can't just drop everything now. We just can't change directions. We haven't even met your family.
Excuse me, ladies. His tone much louder. No longer would he be ignored. You're both parking under a no-stopping sign, and there's the matter of driving 20 miles per hour over the speed limit.
Officer, Jenny turned to the official, thank you for pulling me over. God used you to help me to find my friend Sally.
Sir, Jenny was speeding because she was trying to catch up to us. We're on our way to the East Coast.
I thought they were ahead of me, Jenny said. They just said final goodbyes to Sally's husband.
Near River's Bend, Sally added.
The Lord spoke to me and told me to catch up to them and bring them back to our ranch.
They own a ranch in Canada, Sally tried to be helpful. Bryden Falls. Her husband plays ball for the Challengers, and my husband, that is my ex-husband, the one we said goodbye to this morning, plays for the Grizzlies. That's how we met. They are Christians, the entire family.
Well, I go to church once in a while when the wife pushes me, the officer said somewhat defensively. I know the salvation message.
The what? Sally wanted to know.
Don't you know?
Officer, I didn't say I was a Christian. I'm not really sure what one is.
Jenny interrupted, a touch of indignation in her voice.
You mean, young man, you know about salvation through Jesus Christ and you still haven't received Christ?
Sorry, madam. I mean, I thought maybe I would one day, you know.
Receive Christ as your Lord and Savior? Jenny helped out.
Yes, that's what I mean. Someday.
And do you have children?
A girl and a boy, 7 and 5.
And what about them? Jenny demanded. Shouldn't you be a better example?
I'm sorry, madam. I'll give the matter serious reflection.
Really?
Are you going to give my friend a speeding ticket, officer? She doesn't normally speed.
Do you, Jenny?
A speeding ticket is a small thing, Sally. I would never have found you if it wasn't for this gentleman.
Glad to be of assistance. Now, madam, he looked at Sally, are you going to accept this lady's kind offer?
Well, I don't know. Now it was 2 against 1.
Perhaps you should ask the kids. The officer pointed to the Kenny minivan.
Sally, I thought you said your van was red.
No, the interior is red.
Oh.
The policeman and Jenny followed Sally.
Kids, please step out of the van. I want you to meet Jenny Tanner. And this is Officer Miller, ma'am. This is Officer Miller. Mrs. Tanner has invited us to live with her on her ranch in Bryden Falls for 1 year. She has been trying to catch up to us for 2 or 3 hours. They both think it would be good for us. You know, a time to be healed and strengthened. I said we couldn't just drop our plans like that, but Officer Miller suggested we ask you.
Jenny was gentle.
My name is Jenny Tanner, and I would very much like to be your friend. I know what you've been through. I know you are hurting. And she gave them a warm embrace. I am a Christian, and the Lord spoke to me this morning when I was praying for you and your daddy and your mom
to go and get you and bring you home with me. I have 5 children, including a daughter, a year older than you, Kaylin, and a son a bit older than you, Brandon, but not as tall. You'll be good friends. What do you think? Mom? They both turned to Sally, frowns of confusion on their brows. Well, I don't know. This is a family decision. You have school to think about. I homeschool my kids. You and I can teach your children together. But I don't know how, Sally said. I will teach you how to teach them, Jenny said. But they're already behind. The divorce affected their schooling. We will catch up over the summer months, Jenny replied. I don't know, Mom, Kaylin said. Do you have horses on the ranch? Officer Miller tried to entice the kids. We each have our own horse, Jenny said. And I am sure we can pick one out for Kaylin and Brandon. My own horse? These were the first words Brandon, wearing his dad's fishing shirt, had spoken for hours. Yours while you are with us. Mom, I love horses. Kaylin, too, was suddenly enthusiastic. Me too, Brandon exclaimed. I must warn you, Jenny spoke to them all. It's a different life. No television. Radio is used only for the news. No video games and no junk food. You mean no pop and ice cream and chips? Kaylin was having second thoughts. We make our own ice cream and our own drinks. We eat popcorn sometimes and lots of pies. We preserve berries and all kinds of fruit. Can we go to town sometimes? That's up to your mother, Jenny replied. But Jenny, Sally interjected, is there room for all of us? We have a guest house that has everything except a kitchen. You will each have a bedroom, and we will eat our meals together in the main house. Sounds like a dream. Is there room for my family? Officer Miller kidded. It is a great place to raise a family, Jenny said, but it's not all play. There's horses and other animals to attend to. There's a huge garden that takes a lot of time and energy, and we are always expanding more barns and sheds and corrals. I don't know. Kaylin was hesitant. Brandon? Sally asked her son. If we don't go with Mrs. Tanner, we end up in a city where we don't know anyone. We'll have to go to school where we don't have any friends. Look, kids, said Officer Miller. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, don't you see? I was raised in a big city, and I moved out because I didn't want to raise my children there. It can be harsh. And then he said, can I make a suggestion? Give it a try for 1 month. Consider it a summer vacation. And then decide if you want to stay the full year. If you don't like it, carry on with your plans. Sounds okay to me, Sally said. Do you think your kids will like us? Kaylin looked pleadingly at Mrs. Tanner. I guarantee it. Do we have to become Christians? Brandon wanted to know. Only if you choose to. We give the Lord thanks at every meal. We have a family devotion time every morning at 8. Attend only if you want to. Also, we have a number of people over Wednesday nights. Our children will be there, but you certainly don't have to. Kids, don't you see? Officer Miller said, being a Christian isn't so bad. If this lady were not a Christian, she wouldn't be offering to help you. And then, I'll tell you what, if you decide to go with this lady, I won't give her a speeding ticket. What do you say? They said yes, they would try it for a month. And the kids both said, thank you, Mrs. Tanner. Good, the officer sounded relieved. I'll show you a better way to get back to Bryden Falls. I'll lead you to a highway that takes you north to Canada. From there, it's west to Bryden Falls. Thank you, officer. Jenny was truly grateful and shook the young man's hand. You have been a blessing. I want you to come and visit us. Bring your family. And she handed him a Rubens Plumbing business card. Do you really mean that? Because if you do, we will come and visit. I'd like to know how this story turns out. Please come, officer, Sally said. I too feel indebted to you. Thank you, sir, both kids said. Kaylin, would you like to ride with me? Jenny asked the young lady. I'm sure we have lots to talk about.
Follow me, ladies, Officer Miller said with a voice of authority.
Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 2:15 p.m. Rue found the Grizzlies baseball field, looked around for a familiar face, and recognized Spike in the batter's practice cage, sharpening up for the playoffs to begin in a few days.
Spike!
Rue, you're looking for me? I didn't mean to hurt your kid.
John's okay, Spike.
No, I wasn't looking for you.
No hard feelings?
No hard feelings. Mind if I take a few swings?
Be my guest.
Crack.
Crack.
Crack. Rue was the best, and Spike was impressed.
You sure know how to punish a ball.
90% technique, Spike. It's learning to get all of your body operating together. You're a pretty good hitter yourself.
Thanks. I hear you lost your game.
Spike held up his cell to indicate how he got the news. Big of you guys to cancel your church service to play them. Rue didn't let on he hadn't known and was careful to conceal his disappointment.
Win some, lose some.
I thought you guys had a good chance. You beat us and we're stronger than the Pirates.
Are you sure your kid is okay?
John's leg is fine.
But I seen his leg. Man, it was broken.
Some of the guys figured it wasn't really broken, but I told them, I know, I'm the one who broke it. I heard it snap. It almost made me sick. I'm real sorry, man.
John's leg is fine, Spike. Jesus healed him.
I can't argue with that. Man, was I relieved to see him get to his feet.
It seems you have a good chance to win the playoffs, Spike. You have the league's top pitcher.
No more. He quit.
Trevor, can he quit? Why?
I don't know, man. Tree just quit on us. The team is right sore. Maybe it's because his family left him. They're heading east right now. Real tough. My old lady left me a while back. It hurts big time.
That's a shame, Spike. Do you think I could talk him out of it?
Why would you want to?
The league wouldn't be the same without Tree.
Did he also quit as president of the league?
Yes, the vice president has taken over.
And who is that?
Me,
Spike revealed his yellow teeth when he laughed.
Rue, go talk to Tree if you can find him. He's on vacation. He told us to leave him alone, but you talk some sense into him if you can.
Does that mean he's out of town?
Nope, Tree has nowhere to go. Said he wanted to be alone, to lick his wounds, I guess.
Suspect he's downing beer at his place, or reeling in a couple of trout.
Does he live far from here?
The other side of town. Go back towards customs and make a left just before you get there at the gas station. He lives in a cabin exactly 1 mile from the turnoff. Do you know his truck?
A black pickup, isn't it?
Yeah, F-150. Shiny. He's fussy that way.
1 mile from the turnoff? Rue asked.
Yeah, a cedar cabin on a small piece of property, right-hand side, set in from the road a little. Name's on the mailbox. Can't miss it.
Rue casually returned to the parking lot, but once out of Spike's sight, raced for his van and hurried back towards customs. He now sensed what Jenny sensed. Tree was in serious trouble.
Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 3:15 p.m. Tree's neck was getting kinked and he regretted not bringing a pillow, but there was no way he was going to dig himself out again. He put his folded jacket under his head and stared at the picture of Sally, Kaylin, and Brandon, turning the flashlight off intermittently to save the batteries, keeping their images in his mind. When the flashlight went dead and his beer was finished, he would point his pistol upward and pull the trigger. And if the dreaded flashbacks came before that, he wouldn't hesitate to fire. Tree reckoned he would lose consciousness in about 2 minutes and shortly after that he would be visiting his Marine buddies in hell, if there really is such a place. Tree thought about his only friend, Mac, who he first met in the Marines when they were both still in their teens. Attracted to each other when they learned they were from the same city, Tree found Mac to be solid, tough, a man. And Tree was no flake himself. They got along good and became buds, in time adding Billy and Jesse, and then Pete and Greg to their inner circle. Tree lost four of his buds in a moment's time, and lost his fifth a short while later when Mac accepted Christ. Yes, they were still close. Yes, they would lay down their life for each other. But now they lived in two different worlds, looking at each other from separate shores. Mac ached for Tree to join him. Tree just wanted his friend to come back. Then he went over the last game that cost the season's championship. He smiled a little smile, thinking Mac undoubtedly beat the Pirates to make the playoffs, genuinely happy for the friend who once put himself at risk to save his life. And he thought of John Tanner, the broken leg, and the kid streaking across the infield to retrieve a loose bat. He still hadn't figured it out. John, in the name of Jesus Christ, get to your feet. The words of Rue Tanner stayed with Tree ever since spoken. Tree wanted his last thoughts to be on his family and turned on the dimming flashlight to gaze a final time at the picture. It pained him to recall his boy's shoulder trembling under his hand. He could still feel his daughter's face pressed against his chest and Sally's kiss on his cheek. "Sorry, guys," Tree apologized to the picture. He swallowed the last of the beer and reached for his gun, when his cell chimed in his jeans pocket. Should I answer it? One last contact with the world? "Tree here, make it quick. I've got important business to tend to." "Hey man, how's it going? You beat the Pirates, I presume." "Really? What happened? Did your star performer run out of horseshoes?" "Really? What could be so urgent that he had to miss this game?" "Tough break, man. But there's always next year." "Yes, they're gone. Said our goodbyes this morning. Real tough, but it's for the best. Life minus Tree is better than life with Tree." "Yeah, I'm doing okay. Right now I'm at my favorite fishing spot," he lied. "You know, I brought you up here a few times. The river's running rather fast because of the rain. I got a couple of trout already." Tree had never lied to Mac, rarely lied to anyone, but he did it for his family. "Thanks for the good wishes, but I quit the Grizzlies." "You heard me, pal. Quit as in done, over and out, I'm out of here. Thought I would take some time to lick my wounds, catch lots of fish, and down some extra beer." "Yeah, life can be the pits." Tree wished he could let his butt in on the irony. "Yeah, I know, I'll get over it." Tree fiddled with his pistol. "Maybe sooner than one might think." And then, "Hey, Mac, I don't think I ever thanked you for saving my life way back when, such as it's worth. Thank you." Tree was sincere. "Hey, didn't mean to embarrass you. Just some nagging unfinished business I put off for 20-something years." "Yeah, sure, I'd do the same for you." Or would I? Tree wanted to get in the last dig. "Well, I don't have time to chat all day, and I'm sure you got some serious sorrowing to do." "Okay, and thanks for the call." The light was almost extinguished. All the beer was in his tummy. No sense prolonging the agony. A man must do what a man must do. He placed the jacket over his face, held the picture frame against the jacket with one hand, grabbed the pistol with the other, a couple of quick spins around his finger, exhaled, and fired into the safety glass. Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 3:45 p.m. Mac had just finished talking to his bud, knowing he was having a worse day than himself. And now he was doing what Tree called some serious sorrowing. leaning on his beloved pulpit, his silent but potent friend. He hesitated removing his challenger's uniform, knowing he wouldn't put it on again until the spring of next year, if ever. Would there be a baseball team next year? The way things were going, the most he could hope for is another last place finish. Certain Rue and his son, and maybe a few other players, would no longer be part of the center. They had come so close to winning. They lost by one run, and he was certain they would have come from behind in the last inning for the win if the Pirates didn't play dishonestly. Yes, they were within the rules, Mac brooded, but dirty ball nonetheless, ducking behind a technicality instead of facing their opponents men-to-men. Did we not show good faith by canceling our morning service, giving the Pirates, those scummy Pirates, a fair chance to get into the playoffs? Look how they showed their appreciation, and they call us Christians wimps. It's just not right. And then Mac's conscience kicked in. What about me? Didn't I just do the same thing with Rue by ducking behind a technicality? Rue responded with integrity, and it was my place to honor that integrity by giving him the pulpit the following Sunday. Am I simply reaping what I have sowed? Ouch. Had Mac not been thoroughly angered at Rue, his conscience would have annoyed him for a while. Rue cost us the game. It was simple revenge. A man who turns on his friends like that is not fit to get behind any pulpit. Rue's betrayal canceled Mac's betrayal. His conscience was silenced. Mac pounded the pulpit. We came so close, so close. And the serious sorrowing went on and on. Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 3:45 p.m. The directions were simple, and Rue had no trouble locating the mailbox marked Tree Kenny Incorporated, but was disappointed Tree's pickup was not in the driveway. Maybe he's at a store or something, Rue was thinking, and he'll be back soon. He was happy to have an excuse to be here should he return, to talk him out of quitting the team before the playoffs. That was better than, "My wife thought you were in trouble and I came down to check it out." He called Shep out of the cab to stretch his legs. Walking towards the cabin, he thought he heard a gunshot, like a pistol. But, funny, there was no echo. He also thought he saw the big box crate in the yard shift ever so slightly, but concluded that was impossible. He slowly strolled to the porch and knocked on the door, even though all indication was against Tree being home. "I should have gotten Tree's cell number from Spike," he thought as he leaned against the crate. Dumb. Maybe I should just hustle back to the Ball Diamond before Spike leaves. I'll call Tree on his cell and ask him to meet me for a coffee. He noticed tiny pieces of glass around the outside perimeter of the box, but none on the inside. Odd. Shep was digging in the filled-in furrow, seemingly wanting to get inside the crate, so Rue pushed it aside to show him there was nothing there. But the dog started to dig frantically into the sod, which seemed to have been cut in strips, making a bit of a mess. "No, Shep, stop digging. You can have a bone when you get home." But Shep wouldn't stop until Rue pulled at his collar and sent him back to the van. "Let's go back to the ballpark, boy. We've got to hurry." Something wasn't right, Rue was thinking as he backed out of the driveway and sped back towards Rivers Bend. A big box in the middle of a well-kept yard. Glass along the outside edge. A pistol shot with no echo. Shep digging furiously. It just didn't make sense. And then it did. Rue slammed on the brakes, sending Shep flying off the seat onto the floor, put the van into reverse and gunned it, wheeling backwards down the road and into the driveway, over the lawn, breaking inches from the crate. While he searched frantically for a shovel, Shep was back to digging with his paws. "Look out, boy!" Rue lifted Chef aside and frantically worked the shovel at one end of what he now knew was Tree's grave. "Jesus, Jesus, Jesus," was the only prayer he could think to pray, and he prayed it loudly. His shovel hit something, and he clawed at the dirt with his hands to expose two very large running shoes. "Wrong end," he yelled, and began digging the opposite end. He calculated it had already been more than 5 minutes since he heard the gunshot. "Jesus, Jesus, Jesus," he screamed. Mud from sweat and flying dirt marred his face in his challenger's uniform. Another minute passed before he uncovered and removed a grizzly's jacket to see a picture frame, and then Tree's deadly white face. "Jesus, Jesus, Jesus," Rue continued to yell frantically as he pushed on Tree's chest, though he thought for sure he was moments too late. "If I only paid attention to Shep," he accused himself. Suddenly, a big hand grabbed Rue's shirt, the other hand still buried, and a look of terror swept Tree's ashen face, his eyes bulging intensely. And then he went limp again, not breathing. With an enormous effort, Rue pulled the partly buried body out of the grave, plopped it on its back onto the lawn, and shook the lifeless body up and down, thumping Tree's back against the ground, pounding air into his lungs. Then two big hands grabbed Rue's shirt. The stark look of terror returned to the whitened face. But this time, Tree did not fall back into unconsciousness. Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 4:15 p.m. "Yes, Mom, we'll get on it right away," John spoke into the phone. "As a matter of fact, I don't have to tell them. Everyone has an ear close to the phone. Where are you?" "It sounds like you're still a couple of hours from home. Dad phoned earlier. He couldn't get through to you on your cell. He said to tell you he got the prize and wants to know if he should bring it home. He said you would know what he's talking about." "Okay, Mom, I'll stay by the phone for your answer and relay it to Dad." "No, it was real close, but we lost. I could tell Mr. Macklin was angry, real angry. If Dad had been there, we would have won." "That's okay. Baseball isn't such a big deal to me anymore." "Love you too, Mom." "Love you, Mom," the other kids yelled into the mouthpiece. The kids were excited to have guests, and they were soon in the guest house cleaning from top to bottom. Sunday, June 10th, 2007, 4:40 p.m. Sitting in a window booth in a roadside restaurant, Jenny was hesitant to bring up the subject. Food ordered, she took a deep breath. "There has been a development. Right now my husband is with Trevor in Rivers Bend. The Lord had told me that Reuben should go after him." All three Kennys were attentive and silent. "I have something very important to ask you. I know you've already been through a very trying day, but I have to have an answer." "What is it, Mrs. Tanner?" Kaylin was tense. "Mr. Tanner wants to bring your daddy home to the ranch."
"Jenny, no!" Sally exclaimed, blood rushing to her head.
"But Mrs. Tanner," Brandon spoke up, "you don't understand. Mom and Dad are divorced."
"I know, Brandon." Jenny, too, was flushed with emotion. "I am certain the Lord wants to put your family together again. Your dad would stay with us in the main house. That is, if he agreed to come. We would all have our meals together."
"We'll all get hurt again," Kaylin exclaimed.
"I can't guarantee that won't happen," Jenny's reply was directed to the three. "I'm going for a walk outside to give you a chance to talk it over. My husband and I will respect whatever decision you make."